We're talking Teletubbies. Tinky Winky, Dipsy,
and welcome, welcome, welcome to yet another episode of Mango's Void. Today's a very special episode. We're talking about parenting. We're gonna dig deep into trauma today. We're talking about what constitutes a good parent. What constitutes a good enough parent? And what is it in our childhoods that our parents did as a collective, but also as individuals, that really fucked us up?
Yeah.
Okay? And what we can do as the new generation becoming new parents, because maybe you too are in the phase of life where all your friends are suddenly starting to pop out some babies.
Mm.
And as I said that, our own little baby walked into the room. Say hi, Mango.
Let's get a little sniff into the...
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's her way of saying hello into the mic. So I have done a little bit of research into some of the core things that really fuck you up as a child by your parents. And I forgot the name of the psychologist. Maybe I'll link. Oh, Dr. Nicole LaPera. She came up with a list in one of her books that I've been reading, and it's the six archetypes of childhood trauma. So I've done a little summary of the six archetypes of childhood trauma, and I'd like us to go through them and sort of see how many of these...
Trauma bingo?
Trauma bingo. Like, let's play trauma bingo.
Okay, let's
parent go. Edition.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's six archetypes, six different types of parents that typically cause us damage during our childhood. So I'm going to go down the six different types similar to our regrets episode, and then we'll discuss from there. So let me start with number one. The first type of parent who causes you trauma is the parent who denies your reality.
Interesting.
So this one is pretty self-explanatory.
Right.
We all know the parent who denies your reality.
Yeah.
Here's an example.
Mm.
You go to your mom and you say, "Mom, I don't like Uncle Larry. I don't like him. I think he's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to hug him.
Yeah.
He always wants to give me a hug. And it's a really long hug.
Yeah.
And I don't want to hug Uncle Larry.
Yeah.
And the parent responds with, "Oh, it's just Uncle Larry.
Right.
He's fine.
Right.
He's nice. He's just trying to be nice. That's just Uncle Larry.
Right.
Just go give Uncle Larry a hug." Go give Uncle Larry a hug. You know, that's one common example, very common in Black families.
Right.
That's a very common... If you're African, you're triggered right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know the uncle who's always drinking?
And it's a hug with a sniff. There's a sniff in that hug. It's bad.
And a rub.
Yeah, it's a bad. It's bad.
A lot of rubbing in that hug. Trigger warning, this whole episode, okay, this entire episode is a trigger warning, okay? The second example of a parent who denies their child's reality, maybe you come home from school, you've had a bad day, you sat down with your friends and your friends say, "We don't want to sit with you, you stink," or, "We don't want to sit with you, we don't like the smell of your food because you brought home, you brought in your, call it a scuffed in
what is a lunchbox?
Yes.
A scuffed.
you brought in your lunchbox the curry.
Yeah.
You know, the one that like really stains the lunchbox, but it does really smell like turmeric and curry powder. And the white kids, they were like, "Ew, your food smells really bad.
Yeah.
We don't want to sit with you." And that really hurt your feelings because you're seven.
Right, right.
You're seven and you're the one Black kid. Maybe you're Indian. And so you come home from school and you tell your mom, "My friends didn't want to sit with me today and I'm sad." And your mom says, "It's not that big of a deal. Just go make some new friends."
Right.
"Why are you crying about this small, small box? Yeah? Go make some new friends." You know?
When I was your age.
Hey, we used to walk to cannot. We'll 20. Get to that one. We'll get.
Okay. Okay. We'll get to but this that is case. So. This is denying your reality. This is
yeah. When you come to your parent and you say, "I don't like something about a situation," mm-hmm. or "I feel this way about a situation," and your parent says, "It's just not that deep."
Right.
Larry's not that bad.
Right.
This situation with your friends, it's not that deep. Get over it.
Yes.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. You'll make some new friends.
Yeah, go be friends with Uncle Larry.
Yeah, go be friends with Uncle Larry. And in that moment, your reality has been denied.
Right.
And although, you know, maybe that happens once or twice, it's fine. You'll be fine. Mm. But the problem is, when this happens over and over again, a child is now taught that their perception of reality is not valid and also not trustworthy. Mm. You are taught to deny your own reality and right. you grow up gaslighting yourself about everything.
Right.
So this seems minor, but the consequences of this are that you grow up not really trusting your own intuition, your own gut feeling.
Mm.
You grew up constantly questioning the way that you feel, questioning if the way whether you feel questioning if the way you feel about something is valid or not. If mm-hmm. Am I being too dramatic? I know he hit me 2 or 3 times, but is Brad really abusive? Mm. Am I being dramatic about this? Mm. Am I, you know? And what's ironic is that children actually usually have a stronger connection to their own intuition than adults.
Mm. Right, they're uncorrupted.
Yeah, they're completely uncorrupted. Yeah. And children, usually, their sense of intuition is usually very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And the more and more your reality is denied by a parent figure,
mm-hmm.
you lose your connection with that one strong intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And you now feel very lost. In life. As an adult, you grow up to feel very lost.
Mm-hmm.
You struggle to, you know, navigate life.
Mm-hmm.
You struggle to feel grounded in life
mm-hmm.
because you just don't trust yourself. And oftentimes someone who grew up with a parent that denied their reality, they often look to others to make decisions for them,
absolutely.
To shape their reality for them. Oftentimes someone who has failure to launch syndrome, in mm-hmm. other words, they struggle to sort of get out the bird's nest and start their own life after mm-hmm. college. That is oftentimes someone who grew up with parents that denied their reality. Now they don't know how to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to know what to do with themselves. They mm-hmm. don't trust themselves. They gaslight themselves. So that's number one. The second archetype is the parent who does not see or hear you.
Mm.
So this one is very similar to the first one.
By the way, in this bingo game, I'm doing real good.
You're doing
I'm doing
good.
Real good. Keep going. Keep going. I think I might go.
I think anyone black listening to this, listen.
Here's one game we can win. Let's go. Keep going.
This game is for us.
Strong start.
The parent who does not see or hear you.
Mm-hmm.
So not being seen or heard in your childhood is essentially the experience of feeling emotionally disconnected from one or both of your parents.
Mm.
So an example of a parent who doesn't see you or hear you
mm-hmm.
is, you know, maybe a parent who's chronically overwhelmed, who's chronically stressed out, who's chronically distracted by their own problems, and as a result, they don't have time
mm-hmm.
or the emotional space to give to their child.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a tough one because oftentimes parents who don't see or hear their children are just poor parents.
Yes.
They're just poor.
We're going to talk about that later. Continue.
They're just poor.
Yeah.
And this goes back to an earlier episode we had about should poor people have kids? But one of the things that poor people are oftentimes unable to give their kids is time
mm-hmm.
and emotional availability.
Yes.
But the unfortunate consequence of that is trauma.
Mm.
And we've all heard the saying, children are to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
And this is sort of the black boomer philosophy of parenting, which is that my only job as a parent is to provide you food, shelter, and clothing. Outside
right.
of that, everything is a luxury. Emotional availability, bitch, a luxury.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes when we grow up with parents with this philosophy, which is that I'm here to give you food, shelter, and accommodation, bitch, and that's me being a good parent, is that we oftentimes don't have our emotional needs met as a child. And sometimes this involves like really severe neglect, but most of the times it's pretty subtle forms of neglect, which is just not really spending time with your kid, not talking to your kid, just not really seeing them when they have something to say. Maybe your kid comes up to you and he's like, "Mommy, mommy, look, I'm doing a handstand." And every time you're like, okay, and you're on your phone. You know, chronically being on your phone, your kid's trying to talk to you. "Mommy, what's a baby?" And you're like, "Oh, shut the fuck up. Just take this iPad." You know?
Right.
Being acknowledged and being seen and validated is like a fundamental human need. So when that doesn't happen as a child, you do grow up to feel dismissed, unwanted, and unloved. And the consequences of this are very similar to the first one, which is that you just don't really trust yourself. You learn to not like yourself. You internalize your parents' inability to see you or hear you as, "My parents don't love me because I'm unlovable. My parents don't want to hang out with me because I suck." And oftentimes kids with parents who didn't see or hear them just grew up to have very low self-esteem, very low self-confidence. They also don't trust themselves. They feel invisible. They feel awkward taking up space. They don't feel that they deserve to exist. And they just ultimately don't feel that they're worthy of life, which of course,
it's not ideal.
Depression, you know, anxiety, suicide, substance abuse, that type of thing. So that's number two. Number three, this one is triggering. Having a parent who lives vicariously through you, or a parent who molds or shapes you. Immigrant parents, let's discuss. Let's
come to the front of the class.
Come to the front of the class.
By the way, I was bad in 3 for 3. This is the one I don't have.
This
so
one
I'm very
you don't
interested.
Have? This is, yeah.
Yeah, this is the one that I don't have.
So typically, we know this parent as the stage parent.
Yes.
You know?
Momagers.
The momagers.
There you go.
You know? These are the parents who are overzealous and they push their children to fulfill their own dreams and desires. And oftentimes, parents who live vicariously through their kids, or parents who, you know, push their kids into very specific directions in life, who mold their kids into very specific identities, carry very deep-seated beliefs that they are failures, and then they project that feeling of failure onto their kids. A very common example of this is maybe your dad wanted to be a basketball player. You know, and then he, you know, maybe he didn't make the college team. Or maybe he broke his leg just after he made
the
team.
I was going to go. You know, I'm going to say, listening to you say this, I have to have a moment of complete honesty. Listen, when I was growing up, I always wanted to be the starting small forward for the New York Knicks. And I may have projected that dream onto Mango. And when she was very, very young, we'd be playing ball and I'd be crossing that bitch over.
And it
traumatized her. So my need to project my dream. And listen, I still think she can make it. We're still in the court every single, but it's not healthy. And listening to you, I accept that now. It's not healthy to put
your
dreams
really
on your kid.
I'm really happy that as a father.
Have
you apologized to Mango?
I'm a Jamaican father, so I don't believe in that.
Okay,
but
you don't believe in apologies.
I will only cross over 3 times a day. We'll take it down from the usual 7.
Okay.
You know?
And that's progress.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's one example, you know? The dad who wanted to be a basketball player and who projects it
onto his
Shih Tzu poodle.
Yes.
Another common example, maybe you're a mother, you wanted to be a doctor. Maybe because of finances, med school is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's very time consuming. Or maybe you had a kid earlier than you expected. Mm-hmm. So instead you decided, you know what, I'll just be a nurse. Mm-hmm. But when that kid now grows up, you're like, bitch, you need to be a doctor. Because mm-hmm. I didn't get to be a doctor. Right. So bitch, you need to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes it's not always as overt as projecting your own dreams onto your kids. Sometimes it's actually just as subtle as telling your kid, you know, you're going to be an amazing mom one day. Mm. You know, one day you will be a great mom. Oh,
soft power, soft influence. Yeah. Yeah.
Or just telling your kid, how will you find a husband if you don't know how to cook?
Right.
Bitch, who will marry you? And these subtle phrases that we say to our kids, yeah, like, you're going to be a great wife one day.
Right, right, right.
These, they internalize these as, oh, my job is to be a wife. That what it means to be a valid person, to be a worthwhile person, is to be a wife. Mm. It's to be, you know, to be a mother. It's to be a basketball player. It's to be a doctor. Mm. And so the child then grows up to feel an oppressive amount of pressure to abandon parts of themselves in order to succeed, in order to please their parents. And one of the beliefs that is particularly damaging that a child internalizes when they're raised by a parent who lives vicariously through them or who pressures them to be something that they're not, is that they internalize this belief that they are not lovable or worthy of love unless they are successful in a specific field or unless they are high achievers. And they go their whole lives pursuing and pursuing and pursuing status, fame, achievement.
Moving targets. Yeah.
That will never actually even satiate them. Mm-hmm. In the pursuit of their mother's deferred dreams. This is one that is very common to immigrant children. Also one that's very common to kids who grew up with poor parents. This is the one that, you know, personally, I was born literally when South Africa was free. You know, we got democracy and then I was born. And so I sort of was
the dream.
And there was a lot of pressure on me that I felt growing up to be successful and to be the first person with a degree, the first person with a PhD, to be successful, to have money. And that fucked me up, let me tell you. And I know that a lot of other immigrant kids or kids who grew up from, I don't know, families where your parents sacrificed a lot to get you out the hood also feel that pressure. But yeah, that's where that gets you. This is actually the one with the highest rates of suicide.
Really?
Yeah.
I believe that.
As far as parent trauma goes, this is the one with the highest rates of suicide and the highest rates of substance abuse.
I believe that.
So that's number three. Are you on number three? Number four, this is an interesting one. Having a parent who doesn't model boundaries.
What does that mean?
So, okay, let's define our definitions. Boundaries are just whatever Jonah Hill has. Boundaries are just having limitations. Having very clear definitions of our own personal limitations. And children actually, ironically, have very strong boundaries, and they're very good instinctively at maintaining their boundaries. You know, when you want to give a kid broccoli and they're like, no.
Yeah.
They're very, very quick to learn the word no. Adults are often not that good at setting and maintaining boundaries. An example of having a parent who doesn't model any boundaries is a parent who reads your diary.
Back on the bingo.
Are we back on the bingo?
Let's make this game, by the way. Trauma bingo. I like it.
Yeah. Continue. No, we should.
Yeah.
A parent who violates your privacy, you know, maybe through reading your diary, through going through your bag.
Yeah.
Another common one is a parent who complains to their kid about the other parent. Your parents were going through a divorce and your dad was like, fuck that bitch. Every day he'd come home and be like, your mom is a bitch. She's a fucking bitch and I hate her.
Yeah.
Go tell her I said that.
Yeah.
Another common one is a parent who seeks emotional support from their kid.
Yeah.
Maybe you're 9 years old and your mom is like, I'm really depressed and I feel like I want to kill myself. And you're 9. And now you have to be like, no, mom, don't kill you. You, like, truly don't know how to handle that. When this happens constantly throughout your childhood, you internalize the belief that crossing people's boundaries is normal. And actually not more than normal. It's an act of love and an act of care. And oftentimes people with parents who cross their boundaries will actually end up in relationships with people that are very controlling. Because their own parents didn't model any boundaries. They struggle to see it as a red flag when you're on the first date with someone and they're like, you're not allowed to wear that outfit.
Right. It's love. They view it as love.
Yeah. They view that control as love. Or a child can grow up to be extremely paranoid and extremely secretive
about
their own personal life because their boundaries were, because their boundaries were so often crossed as a child that they grow up just with this paranoia that everyone is out to peer into their lives. And that is very damaging to relationships. So oftentimes people who grew up with parents who didn't model any boundaries, they struggle in relationships because they have issues. They're people pleasers. They also struggle to set boundaries themselves. They struggle to maintain boundaries themselves. They struggle to see that other people's disrespect of their boundaries is disrespect because they view it as an act of love. They themselves become very paranoid or become very secretive, and their partners in future relationships struggle to trust them. So it can be, this one is one that really affects future relationships. So that is number four. Number five, having a parent who is overly focused on appearance. This one is for all the women out. This one's very gendered.
Just having like a slay queen for a mom?
Yes. Having a slay queen for a mom.
Gotcha.
Oftentimes, parents that are insecure about their own appearance, and not even just their own appearance, but parents that are just insecure generally project their own need to be admired and liked by other people onto their children. So oftentimes, when you hear parents say, but what will they think with you dressed like that? What will people think? That is a parent who's
projecting. The amount of African moms that have kept their daughters in abusive marriages because of what would they think at church.
Preach. This one is also religious.
Definitely.
This one is very people with religious trauma. You know,
I come from a denomination of Christianity where divorce wasn't even allowed. You could get divorced, but you couldn't get remarried. So it's a huge stigma to get divorced. The amount of people I knew stayed in physically abusive relationships because of what would they think. It's a big deal. That's a really tough one.
No, when you grow up with a parent who is really concerned about other people's gaze, you really internalize that into your adult life and it just fucks with every facet of your life. So an example of a parent who's overly focused on appearance is maybe a parent who comments on your weight. Maybe you have a parent who is overly concerned about maybe just your hair. This is the black girls, we can relate to this one. Maybe you got your hair relaxed as a little kid and you go to Stacy's party, but Stacy's white and all her other friends are white. So they can just jump into the pool. But your mom is like, we just paid 500 rand, bitch. For this relaxer, you are not going to swim.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, mom, but I want to swim. Everyone's swimming because you're 8. And you just want to swim. And your mom is like, bitch. How will you look? You know? So what happens is oftentimes people with parents who are overly fixated on their appearance or just overly fixated on other people's gaze of them will internalize the belief that they need to fundamentally change who they are in order to be loved. So maybe they need to lose 300 pounds in order to be loved. And so often, obviously, this is the one with the most eating disorders as a consequence.
Right.
And by the way, eating disorders are the mental health issue with the highest rates of suicide. So let's let that one sink in. But this also happens when you have a parent who's obsessed with their own appearance. Maybe you have a parent who's always on a diet. Every single day, it's a new diet.
Yeah.
And now the whole house has to be on a diet.
Yeah.
Maybe they're always in the gym, excessive exercising. Or maybe they're just obsessive about food. Like, this is a guilty food. This is a bad food. This is a good food. And you, being 10 years old, internalize this. And you grow up to also be obsessive about your weight and about food. And you develop a bad relationship with food. And maybe you have an eating disorder. And maybe you struggle in your relationship to feel loved as you are. And maybe you grow up to be a perfectionist. Maybe you grow up to just be very critical of yourself. Because we do inherit our parents' criticism as our inner monologue. And so this one is pretty bad too, as far as consequences. Just having a parent who is fixated on the gaze of other people. Number six, this is the last one. This is the one that, in my opinion, is the most rampant and the most damaging. This is having a parent who cannot regulate their emotions. This is the one that is the most common. And I say this just from pure observation. Just when you walk outside the house and you engage with people. And I just recently got my license, my driving license. And being a driver on the road has really made me realize just how angry the average person is. Just how... unable to regulate emotions the average person is. So what does it mean to regulate your emotions? Regulating your emotions is essentially the process of experiencing an emotion, one that is unpleasant, and allowing that emotion to pass through your body, as opposed to resisting it or distracting yourself from the emotion by drinking or... whatever, substance abuse, but just actually allowing the emotion to pass through your body and just let it, just breathing through it until it's gone. Most people are unable to do this, and I'm also still learning.
Speaking of emotional regulation too, it's not just negative emotion. People don't know how to regulate positive emotion. You notice that in America especially, we've almost kind of thrown away the quintessential old idea of happiness. People aren't happy, they're manic. People don't even know how to feel happiness anymore. When they're happy, they get manic and they go buy a car. When they something good happens to them at work, they don't even know how to regulate that. But the, negative side, the negative side is way more obvious because it has more immediate negative side effects. But not knowing how to just feel happiness and be normal. It's like, gotta raise at work. Let me go get a bag of cocaine and buy a car. Like, people also don't know how to regulate positivity either.
People just don't know how to sit with emotions. Like, just how to live with emotions.
And there's no happiness anymore, only mania.
So, this one is the one, in my opinion, is the most, maybe not the most destructive, but the most common and the one that we see most often. And you can tell just by how few people you meet, like you say, that are not manic, and how few people you meet that are just calm, how many people just didn't have that in their childhoods modeled to them. So most people didn't have parents who were even able to identify, let alone regulate their emotions. And there are two ways generally that emotional regulation goes awry. The first is that maybe you have a parent who projects their emotions outward. So maybe you had a parent who would scream or yell or slam doors or punch the walls or just storm off whenever they're angry. Mm. But there's also people who project their emotions inward, which is maybe you had a parent who, when they were upset, they would withdraw love, which is just as damaging. Maybe they give you the silent treatment. They shut down. And that is also... you know, a result of being overwhelmed by emotions and just shutting down. And when you were raised by a parent or parents who weren't able to regulate their emotions, it is very unlikely, almost impossible, that you will be able to develop the coping skills that you need to just deal with life's stresses and to have just emotional resilience. And this is the one that obviously affects your relationships the most into adulthood. If you don't know how to regulate your emotions, this is the one that often leads to divorce. Most divorces are not caused by a lack of love. They're actually caused by a lack of emotional regulation, by a lack of, you know, an inability to just cope with difficulty. And Michelle Obama spoke about this vaguely in her interview about her marriage with Obama, but you can see just how prevalent this one is. So those are the six horsemen of parenting trauma.
Yes, if you got bingo, guys, let us know. Maybe you can send them a prize or something. If you got bingo, let us know.
Let us know if you got bingo.
Fascinating. You know, listening to this, it sort of made me think about the different kinds of children that this produces. And something that kind of makes me spiral thinking about how none of us really have free will is how much the order in which you were born in your family also dictates who you are. Because, you know...
Thank you for listening to the first half of this conversation. If you're interested in listening to the rest of this conversation, you will find it on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/bobosvoid, or you can just click on the link in the description box below. So, patreon.com/bobosvoid, or just click on the description box below. Thank you.